Chapter 34. King was on his way to the meet, visions of blondes and Porsches dancing in his head. The man on the other end of the phone hadn't sounded pleased at having to cough up all that money. That was just too damn bad for him, King thought, smiling as he downshifted the stolen Outback and turned past the Welcome to Paradise sign at the edge of town. When his contractor demanded they get together back in Paradise, King was tempted to up the payoff back to $1 million. But impulsiveness had gotten him into trouble before, and he wasn't going down that path again. Not this time. Not when he was finally going to hit it out of the park. He shook his head, remembering how he'd done time in various state pens for boosting cars on the spur of the moment, or the one time he pistol-whipped a gas station attendant over $78. $78 freaking dollars. Even his greed had been small time. Petty and small time. Not anymore. That was not to say he wasn't totally pissed off that the exchange was happening in Paradise. It was risky and just plain dumb for him to go back to the town where he was likely going to be charged with felony murder. He had hoped that the DA would see the old biddy's death as an accident, and that they had meant the woman no harm. But he guessed the cops had spotted her split lip, and that their attempt to clean her up and to place her back in bed hadn't gone a long way in putting things right. With all that was hanging over his head, there was only one option: make the exchange and get gone. He'd left Hump behind earlier that day while his ex-cellmate was snoring up a storm. King left him a note with $2,000 extra from the $10,000 they'd earned. He'd already given Hump his $5,000 for the job. Surprisingly, King felt crappy about leaving Hump on his own with just $7,000 and cutting him out of the big money. But prison friendships went only so far. Truth be told, he hoped the extra $2,000 would encourage Hump to do the favor King had asked of him in the note. He wanted Hump to stay in the motel room a few more days and to keep as low a profile as possible. Besides, Hump was a guy who could make $7,000 go a long way. He was an uncomplicated man without a lot of needs. He drove slowly along the roads leading to Paradise and kept under the speed limit once he'd gotten into town. He didn't know Paradise. He'd been to town only once, and it wasn't like that had gone according to plan. He figured that if he got collared for the old lady's death, he could probably plead it down to manslaughter and save the Commonwealth the expense of a trial. But if he got pulled over by a cop and had to use his gun, he was screwed. There was no pleading down killing a cop. Do that and they hunt your ass down no matter what, and they might even find a way to kill you before you ever got to see the inside of a cell. King slowed to a stop and turned left onto the road that led into the wooded area of town north of the bluffs that ran along Sawtooth Creek. From what he could tell downtown, Paradise wasn't a hive of activity. But it was Times Square compared to the road he was on now. The trees were so thick that the canopy nearly blotted out the moonlight. When he spotted the metal gate for the access road, he stopped and got out of the Subaru. The gate was unlocked, as he was told it would be. He swung it open, got back into the car, drove up the road to the utility shed, and parked. As he'd done at the meet in the supermarket, King had come early to make sure this wasn't a trap. Not that he thought his employer capable of such a thing. He'd known guys like him all his life, inside and out of the joint. Street-savvy users, tough in their way, but not hard. Setting a trap of the kind where someone winds up dead took more sand than people thought. King had never killed a man, though he'd been mad enough at the gas station attendant to crack his skull. Whether the guy had the stuff to set a trap or not, King did his due diligence. Turning the car in a slow circle, using its headlights, he looked for cars hidden in the darkness or for a silhouette that didn't belong. All he saw were some tiny pairs of glistening eyes, eyes that were there 1 second and then gone the next. Out of the car, he had a look inside the utility shed, a flimsy old wooden structure that held nothing more than a broken rake handle and a million spiderwebs. He looked for tire tracks that didn't belong to the Subaru, and he listened. It was a waste of time. All he could hear was the faint sound of flowing water and the chittering of insects. About 10 minutes later, he heard the distinctive sound of tires spitting out rocks on the dirt road, and he caught the sweep of headlights coming his way. King poked his head back into the car, checked the dashboard clock, and clapped his hands together. Right on time. But even before the car came to a stop, King felt something wasn't right. The car wasn't right. The man who'd hired him wasn't the four-door sedan type. And when he saw the stranger get out of the car, King knew there might be trouble. So when King got out of the Subaru, he came out with his 9mm pointed right at the man's midsection. "Relax, tough guy," the stranger said, raising his empty hands to the sky. "Who are you?" King asked. "I'm the guy with your money." And then, as if anticipating King's next question, he said, "You didn't think our mutual friend was really going to drive around with nearly $1 million in cash in his front seat, did you? He strike you as the kind of man to do that? Let's see it. And mister, if you know what's good for you, reach back into the car slow, very slow." The man did as King demanded and pulled a big leather satchel out of the sedan. He swung it, tossing it so that it landed about 10 feet in front of King's car. "It's all there, but go ahead and check." King, keeping the 9mm raised, took slow, measured steps toward the bag. "Stay right where you are." "It's all there." "So you said." "You don't recognize me, do you?" the money man asked. "How do you think the shithead who hired you found you?" King waved his gun dismissively. "I got no time for this. Don't matter to me who you are." Then finally, with the money tugging him to his knees like a magnet, King lowered his gun and unzipped the satchel. "Hey, what the... newspapers? Goddamn newspapers, you mother..." King swung the 9mm back up, but it was already too late. When he looked up from the leather bag, he saw something that confused him into inaction. It looked like an orange oil filter. Then he noticed it was attached to the end of a gun. Just as he made sense of it, there was a flash. He was already dead by the time the soft bark of the shot reached his ears. Good thing he was dead, too. As hard as his head hit the rock in the dirt beneath him, it would have really hurt.